A comfortable home means different things during a Wisconsin winter or a Midwestern summer. But some of your home's design and construction elements work on your behalf all year round. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to get some great advice on making sure that your home is as energy efficient as possible, whether it's a brand new construction or a 100-year-old house. John Freiberger is a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in the evaluation of older structures. He's the founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. John, great to have you with us.
Glad to be back.
And Ken Adams is the owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. He and John have been doing these programs together for quite a few years, and very good to see you too, Ken.
It's great to be back. Nice to see you both.
And you are welcome to join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you taken steps to increase your home's energy efficiency, or maybe you need to know how to do that? Ken and John are happy to help. Well, John, we titled this show How to Be a Thermal Turtle, and I love that image, especially as the temperatures have dropped and the snow is piled up. I picture this little turtle all hunched in with maybe a little scarf around his neck. What does being a thermal turtle mean?
Exactly what you said. Just like a turtle, we really need to we forget our houses sometimes to protect them all the way around. Now, if a turtle had a five-part shell, that is a front wall, a back wall, two side walls, and a roof, turtles wouldn't have survived as a species. But here in Wisconsin, we are surviving despite not being thermal turtles. We have all kinds of places in our houses that leak. Mm. We have a lot of intersections. And one of the things that has really developed in the last 15 to 20 years is exterior insulation. Hmm. And what's great about exterior insulation is that we make new homes efficient, but if you've got an old house like my 1850s house, you can make that old house efficient by adding a tight shell around it. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of our design challenges come up today is how do we retrofit the old housing stock in mm-hmm. the United States? We have a large proportion of homeowners in the northern heating climates of America that know that they need more insulation. And I think both Ken and I have seen insulation disasters. We'll add a lot of insulation to the attic, but no venting. So all of a sudden, the roof sheathing is rotting away.
Or just do a poor job of insulating, which creates cold spots and hot spots.
Yeah. The Department of Interior, if you have a historic home on the National Register, is you cannot insulate the sidewalls unless you can control the moisture coming in. Mm. So when I inspect houses and when I get called in for litigation, which seems to be more and more frequent, one of the prime things that we're seeing is actual decay of the framing of houses that have gotten wet because of bad insulation systems and bad water barrier systems and bad air barrier systems. Mm-hmm. So our turtle shell really has multiple parts. We've got the thermal turtle, but the thermal turtle isn't going to work without the air turtle. We need the air barrier because if you have a well-insulated house and you open all your windows, you'll find that air movement does cool the inside of the house. And then we also need a moisture barrier, so what is coming down on the outside, which snow this week, but it'll be rain soon, mm-hmm. doesn't get in and wreck those walls.
So it sounds... Go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say, I'm looking forward to hearing John do his turtle imitation.
There we go.
It's great fun at parties, but when he's talking about moisture, too, moisture is not just a problem from the exterior. It's a moisture that we create in our home that in poorly insulated homes without vapor barrier and proper ventilation and insulation, moisture goes from the inside to the outside. And we have both seen buildings rot out from the inside out as well as the outside in.
So I'm trying to get kind of a handle on what elements in a structure have the most impact on how thermally efficient it is. So it sounds like insulation, control of moisture. But John, you were also talking about how, you know, our homes are not built like a turtle shell. You know, there are these different pieces. And, of course, there are windows and doors. So what do we really zero in on when we're talking about this?
Well, that's a really very, very good question. It's a very complex question. Primarily it's a combination of water protection, air infiltration protection, keeping heat in, cold out, in the wintertime, of course, in our environment, and a function of moving stale air out of the house once it's created, because when we exhale, we have carbon dioxide, we have gases from our stoves that don't work correctly, and we have to have proper ventilation for that, too.
So we're wanting to move some things out, like built-up moisture and different kinds of fumes or things like that, but we're also trying to keep things as insulated and as kind of contained as possible. So how do you balance those two?
Control is basically it. I mean, in Alaska, in northern part of the country, there's a movement now to create these exterior shells, and they're doing them on new work almost all over the state, but also in retrofits. And what they do is they create a layer of insulation over the entire house, roof, walls, down to the foundation. And they there are formulas to do this correctly, but what they're trying to do here is create an insulation barrier over the entire living structure. Mm-hmm. I've seen pictures of frames built on the outside of the existing homes in retrofits, and they would super insulate those exterior walls. They super insulate the ceiling, and then they control the temperature inside with. You could use geothermal in some places, air heat pumps in moderate temperatures. Then there's mechanical air exchangers. We used to call them air-to-air heat exchangers. Now they call them heat recovery ventilation systems and offshoots of that to control the air. So as opposed to a haphazard way of controlling air movement, like a window that doesn't seal well when you got your heat on and It draws air in. Now we want to seal those up and control the air, control the amount of air that moves in and out.
So that structure that you just described, Ken, John, is that kind of like dropping a new shell around the turtle? I mean, that's what it kind of sounds like.
Well, what they're doing in Alaska is a lot of this is their new housing, and people can download lots of pictures and research on this. The system is called Remote in Alaska. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Residential Exterior Membrane Outside Insulation Technique. And if they go to the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, which has a really easy website, cchrc.org, and check reports, type in remote, you can get their 2007 discussion with all kinds of interesting cross-sectional drawings of what they are doing in Alaska.
There's also four or five YouTube videos of their work. Actually creating houses that are like this. So they're really great to look at, too, when you've got 20 minutes to go.
That's right. And at the same website, you can download Persist.
And Persist. Remote and Persist.
Remote is really Alaska. It is really, my cohort here said, super insulated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go quite that far in Wisconsin unless we really are looking for a zero net or a very low net house. But the Persist system, which is used in Wisconsin, and again, well documented by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, is what I think Ken and I are often designing for new homes and for old house retrofits as well. Now, on a new house, what we're doing is we're designing a framing system, we're putting insulation inside the framing system, we're adding a vapor barrier, and then we are putting usually rigid foam on the exterior. So now let's say we have an existing house, an 1880s farmhouse, and we're going to re-side it because the old wood siding is shot, and we're going to put on vinyl or cement or new wood or whatever. Basically, we can strip that thing down to the sheathing and start there. We can put in an air barrier, just like on a new house. There's no reason why a house of that age has to leak any more than a new house.
What would you recommend for an air barrier?
Well, that's a good question. The very best is going to be a liquid applied vapor permeable barrier like Grace's perma barrier. But for many situations, simple things like Tyvek will work well. What is nice about Tyvek and many of the house wraps, Henry, Oberdijk, the other companies, is they have very good details now for how to stop all those leaks around the windows. And what we find in many houses when we look at the tests is that these houses are leaking terribly around the windows. They have a good quality window, good quality wall, and it has big holes in it. So once we get this air barrier on, so the house is going to leak, we can add 1, 1.5, 2, even 3 inches of insulation on the exterior. Then we can add furring strips, and we can add any kind of siding that we want. And what we have then
What are furring strips?
Oh, a furring strip is simply, because we're putting on the foam, let's say you want to keep the look of your Victorian house with wood. You don't want to nail wood against foam. The wood is going to react badly. So what we do is we'll put on a 3/8 to 3/4 inch furring strip that is nailed vertically on the house.
Okay.
And then you can nail your siding to that.
It's kind of like a big, wide, flat stud nailed every 16 inches right
over. So it's just something to attach the wood to.
Well, it's more than that, because what it does is it gives you a drying area, an area for air movement. Now, we often design them screened at the bottom against insects, of course, so that they actually vent into the attic.
Hmm.
And if they're done really well, you can use them in lieu of soffit vents. You can actually vent the attics with them. The other thing that happens is when the wind blows against them, the air will move through them, so it'll actually pressurize these little spaces that aren't connected to the inside air. So it might blow some air up in the attic, but no air comes into your house. So if they're really designed correctly, they're actually a pressure balance as well. And this is part of the PERSIST system that we can take a look at CCHRC if we wish.
And we will put up a link to CCHRC.org on the Facebook page in just a few minutes. And tell us again, that's a cold climate...
The Cold Climate Housing Research Center.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
So they're up in... they're in various places. They're in Minnesota, but they also have an office in Fairbanks, Alaska, and that is where all the testing for the remote system was done. So this isn't just a design.
Right.
This is actually things that they built, and they saw how they worked in, I think, 3 different cities in Alaska, because Alaska has a lot of different climates, even more climate than Wisconsin has.
Interesting. We are talking with Ken Adams and John Freiberger today about home improvements and repair, especially with an eye to energy efficiency. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment on the Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And you can also send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Dave Potraz, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're getting great advice from Ken Adams and John Freiberger about how to make your home more energy efficient. And John, I wanted to go back to something that you said kind of in passing. It comes up often, but I think it certainly bears repeating. You said when we get the results of the test, and what test is it that will tell a homeowner how energy efficient their home is and where those problem spots might be?
Well, we really need to start everything with science, and the only way to get some science is to get some numbers and some thermal imaging, and so an energy analysis of a house. Now, that should contain at least two parts. One is a blower door test, where we're going to depressurize the house to 50 pascals, so basically we're sucking a lot of air out of it, and then the energy auditor can see how fast that house fills up. And if we've had houses that we couldn't depressurize to 50 pascals. We get to 35, but the houses are so leaky.
Wow.
Yeah, that it was terrible. And they can go around the houses with smoke candles. They can check your windows. They can see if air is coming in through those 1950s recessed cans in the ceiling, which weren't airtight. So that gives us a lot of information. The next thing is thermal imaging. And you need to have somebody who's pretty smart to look at thermal imaging, especially if you do it in the summer. But thermal imaging on a day like today is going to give people like Ken and I and energy auditors, who know even more than we two do, as to where there's problems with radiant loss. So in other words, where is the insulation barrier bad?
So it's not necessarily that there's this, you know, direct, you know, all the air is getting there, all the heat is getting sucked out here. It's radiant is more kind of a gradual loss.
That's right. Radiant loss is very different than heat that's being carried out on the air. And most houses have both of those problems. But then somebody who does envelope retrofit designs, the way our firm does, can take that information and we can decrease the radiant loss, and we can make huge reductions in the thermal loss due to air infiltration and exfiltration. But we have to start with science so that we know what we're doing. The other thing that's good to know is really look at your utility bills, and you want to analyze your mechanical equipment. If you have one of these old furnaces that's only 60% efficient, a 50% efficient water heater, and a terrible old 10-seer air conditioner, well, we may look at it and say, well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to look at some new mechanical equipment.
Well, and you might have to anyway when you start to seal up the envelope of your home. You're going to potentially create problems that, maybe with inefficiencies of unburnt gases and things like that. So you'll probably need to look at all of this at the same time.
And that's something that those mechanicals, as you call them, will get looked at during a home energy audit.
Yes, Ken's referring to something even more sophisticated than that, is we can now seal houses so tight that we can get air changes down to half an air change per hour. Mm-hmm. And when a house is that tight, we're going to end up with issues.
Yeah, I mean, the common one everybody hears about is radon. When you tighten up a house, if you have radon that normally would just sort of find its way through the ring joist and out windows that are, not very well sealed, all of a sudden you've got this radiation sitting in the basement and slowly working its way up. So you need to do long-term radon tests when you do this. So,
and we actually talked about that just a few weeks ago.
Oh, you did. Okay.
And there was I'll repost that article on Facebook because I wrote up an article after that show talking specifically about radon testing.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. So your audience is well versed.
They're on the case.
But that's just one issue. I mean, that's just one potential issue.
Right.
With new construction to try to make things more energy efficient. There are more and more designers that are stacking up kitchens and baths very close to each other so that it has a benefit of keeping costs down because they're close together, but it also keeps all of the utilities together, and you can do things like use recovery systems on your drain to collect some of the heat off the drain, feed it into your hot water heater, and improve the efficiency of the water heater by not using cold water, but water that's actually tepid because it's been drawn off of the drain. So, these are other techniques. I'm sort of meandering here because we were talking about the envelope and how to seal it up, and I think maybe we'd be well served to get back to that.
All right. So John, you were talking about that you can have good insulation, you can have good windows, but there still could be loss around those. So what do you do in a case like that where the sum of the parts is less than you would hope for?
Well, the easy solution is if we're doing the thermal turtle where we're actually getting at the exterior of the house. Now, that means the siding's got to come off, which not everybody is willing to do. But we see so many old houses where the siding is really shot. Lead paint that is falling to the ground, wood that is simply coming apart. I just looked at a house yesterday that was built in the 80s, and the siding is completely rotting due to the bad flashings with the roof. Icicles actually forming at the bottoms of the wall where the water is running down through the siding.
Behind the siding, some of
yes.
Some
so cases. So, yeah. So Michael and I have been discussing, in fact, I'll be sending him the process stuff because he is definitely going to be re-siding his house. Now, that allows him to get in and to put a complete wind barrier on this house, which I'm sure it didn't have when it was constructed back in the 80s. I'm working on 23 condo buildings right now that have no air barriers at all. And we had bedrooms that they couldn't get above 60 degrees that now heat just fine. And we didn't make any changes to the insulation, but what we did is we stopped all of the leakage around the windows.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, we have some folks that would like to join in. Our phones are full right now, but you can either wait a little bit and call 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones, and Paul in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Paul.
Hi. We have a 1920s bungalow with the existing wood siding. And it has, it looks like horsehair insulation in the wall. And we're wondering what the options are to to insulate those walls.
Is the exterior, is it brick or is it wood cladding? What kind of siding do you have?
It's the existing wood siding.
Mm-hmm. And have you done any sort of testing? We were talking about energy audit a few minutes ago.
No, we haven't.
Okay. That would be a great starting point because what will happen when they put the house under pressure is they'll be able to tell you what where the biggest culprits are, and it'll also give you a baseline to improve off of. One of the positive things about doing that is when once you're done insulating it, you can go back and have another energy audit done. A lot of these auditors will do two as a package price. And if you achieve certain certain levels of increase, you may be entitled to some local to either tax credits or local energy credits from your utility. I'm not sure what Milwaukee's like, but there are some around the state.
One thing we have to look at, Paul, on old houses is always pick the low-hanging fruit first.
Yeah.
So look at your furnace, look at your attic, get a pressure test done. If your windows are just horribly, horribly leaky, you may, without tearing the siding off the house, you may be able to take the casing out the windows from the exterior and seal them.
That's a big one, really.
That is a very big one. And Paul, it's really difficult to insulate the sidewalls of old houses without causing problems inside the walls with condensation. So what I'd encourage you to do is try to get enough energy savings where it simply does not pay for you to insulate those walls. Now, that what you have in the walls in 1920, that isn't horsehair. That's actually a cellulose fiber that was called balsam fir, was one of the brand names. It came in as matting. It came in loose, and it also came in sort of a black tar paper, craft paper mat. Usually was about an inch thick. But that actually, you probably currently have about an R5 or an R6 wall. So you could fill that with cellulose, and you might get yourself up to R10.
And I just want to jump in. R is the level of how well insulated.
It's a resistance to radiant transfer. So let's look at everything you can do to that house, Paul, before you insulate the sidewalls, because that is going to be expensive, and if you've got a 30-year payback on it, as far as your energy bill, it's not going to be worth doing.
Right. Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul, and, you know, give us an update.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks. And let's go back to the phones, and Alan in Appleton is up next. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thank you. I've actually got a few questions for you guys. First off, I want to build a house that's 230 square feet smaller than what they allow me to build. They want 950, and I want to be at 720. How do I go about making that happen? Because the way the house is sized, it probably would almost double or add 50% of my cost going up that much. And the other question, two questions, I want to do 2x6 walls, either bad insulation or foam, and then I want to, on the outside of the sheathing do 2-inch styrofoam and then steel on the outside of that. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about vapor barrier, where exactly to put it, depending upon what I insulate the inside walls with. And the other thing I was wondering about is, as far as, it's going to be a pretty tight house, so I'm wondering as far as air exchange, it's going to be two-story. If I do some sort of an air exchange, have you ever tried, like, I was thinking about possibly burying 100 feet of 8-inch or 10-inch sewer pipe, PVC,
sure,
underneath.
Yeah, that was a
coil.
Yeah, that was a technique that was popular in the 80s, and there's some problems with that. We can talk about that in a moment. But let's
go back
to the
size of the house, the vapor barrier, and then the air exchange.
Well, I'll start with the size, and then I'll bet you John will have a lot to say about the wall thickness. But the size of the house, I imagine that is it your subdivision, or is it
It's an old neighborhood, and there was a house there. It was tore down, and now that's what they require.
Sure.
You know, it was written in.
So what you'll need to do then is you'll need to find out if you can get a zoning variance on that. And what you'll do is you go down to your local zoning board with a thumbnail sketch of what you'd like to do. They'll look at the property probably from a satellite photo, and they'll let you know whether it's worth pursuing. Some areas, there are there's no way you're going to get a permit, a zoning variance to do a smaller house. Other ones, other locations, they'll be just fine with it. That's so. If you have any issues at all, or are uncomfortable doing this, hire an architect. Hire an architect. It might be, you know, you spend a little bit of money, but having the money spent up front and getting what you want will save you in the long run. So that would be the first thing to go. And then, John, do you want to talk about this next one, and then I'll talk about the air exchange?
Well, the insulation is pretty simple. If we take a 2x6 wall and basically fill that with high-density cellulose, we're going to end up with about R19 for that portion of the wall. And on the exterior, if depending upon what we're using, extruded polystyrene or urethane, we're going to end up with about R12. So our house where we're using the foam in the studs is going to have significantly more energy efficiency than the cellulose. Cellulose is a wonderful product, but you're looking at a difference between about, if you put all the assemblies together, you know, the drywall and the interior and all of that, a difference between about R31 and R47. R47 with the foam would be a heck of a wall. Now, the other nice thing about the foam is that is also your vapor barrier. So you're not putting up the old 6 mil poly that always ends up with 5,000 holes in it. In fact, you wouldn't even have to do a complete build-out. You could just put in maybe 3 inches of foam, and that still is going to really help. And then your outside 2 inches of foam is going to get rid of the thermal bridging. So you're going to have a really nice wall system there, and you're going to be very tight. So, yes, you are going to need some sort of mechanical air change, so either an HRV, a heat recovery vent system, mm-hmm. or an ERV, an energy recovery vent system. You want mm-hmm. to talk to your mechanical contractor to see which of those is going to work the best for you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about this this piping that would bring in fresh air. It's a great idea and concept. You have a long pipe that goes from your basement through the earth below the frost line and then comes out of the ground, you know, several hundred feet or at least several dozen feet away from the house. So air that is maybe 0 degrees goes into your, is drawn in through the pipe, comes on into your basement at, 30, 40, maybe even 50 degrees, and then you only have to heat it that much. Great. However, the big problem people were having with that is condensation and then mold building up in the pipes. So as far as I know, they haven't cracked that nut. And until they do, I would be very, very reticent to do that in my own home.
Okay. Well, thank you much.
Sure. And Alan, if you have just a second, tell us why you want to build a smaller house.
Well, most of the houses, and I work on a lot of houses, actually, they're just, to me, it's more an efficiency. Floor plan layout is typically really, really bad in a house. And the design that I have for my partner and myself, we'll do everything we needed to do, and it's kind of an expandable floor plan, like you can change things. There's actually a movable wall on the first floor, and I don't really want to pay a whole bunch of money to heat space that I'm not using, and if I want to have more space, I'll build a bigger garage.
That's my ideal. My ideal perfect house would be a bathroom and a 10-car garage.
Well, thanks, Alan, and I love the idea of small houses. We've had someone on the show before that's in like a 200-square-foot house. I think I'd have a hard time with that, but I like the idea of small and cozy and really efficient. Well, small, cozy, and really efficient are a good way to describe Ken Adams and John Freiberger. They are here offering their advice for energy-efficient homes and all kinds of home improvement projects. And you can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. And we had a post on our Facebook page. That's the Larry Mealer Show. And Mealer is M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Larry never thinks to spell it because he's known how to spell it for a long time. But a lot of folks aren't quite sure how to find it. Prem says, I have electric baseboard heaters, which I don't like much. For one thing, the wall above them gets pretty warm. And I can just imagine some or a lot of that heat is going through the wall to the outside. What is the most efficient type of electric room heat?
Well, that's a very good question, and there's some debate about it. Some people think that radiant floor, electric floor heat, is very efficient. We find that unless the floor is very well insulated underneath, that it doesn't usually do the job, so you'd need some kind of a supplement. I think a lot of people are having good luck with the hydronic electric, either baseboard or wall heaters, and that what they do is they heat up water or liquid, and so this liquid radiates out after the unit shuts itself off, so it kind of evens out the heat a little bit. The other issue to look at is, in a lot of these homes, there's no insulation in the wall behind the heater.
Right.
So you're heating not just the inside of the wall, but you're heating the interior of the wall, and that heat is escaping the house. Mm-hmm. So I would say, there again, we say do an energy audit. You know, that's a really great way to get a concept of what you're dealing with, and then do some investigation on what you can do to seal that behind the mm-hmm. heater, and then decide where your money's going to be spent on the utilities. Do you have anything to add, John?
No, I think the thermal imaging, if you see bright colors suggesting huge amounts of radiant loss low at the wall, well, you have issue. But mm-hmm. it wouldn't surprise me if you saw the walls fairly equalized as far as the radiant loss because of the air movement.
That's
so
true.
You don't know. We keep saying we have to have science before we plan anything. I like to have science before I spend money for coffee. I'm so cheap. But a lot of these questions really can be answered with a good home energy audit. I think for many people, it's probably the best $400 to $500 they may ever mm-hmm. spend.
Great. And let's go back to the phones and Joe in Sheboygan. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I had a question for the guys. Actually, back in October, me and my wife bought a home that is a passive solar envelope home. It was built in 85. So the windows and everything are just starting to kind of go out and get a little bit of just dry rot around them. And this is our first winter in the house. We haven't spent a summer in the house. So we're not 100% sure on the efficiency of it and how the system entirely works and if it's worth it. And so with the new windows on the back of the house, we're either considering putting in all new single pane windows again to allow the sunlight to come in and heat that envelope, or do we just put a double or triple pane window in and just expand the house out and actually put a furnace and everything in, because right now it does have baseboard radiant heat and a wood burning stove as its main heat source inside the home.
And the glass, the room with the glass enclosure, what's the floor made out of?
It's actually, it's a bi-level house. Mm-hmm. And so the main floor that's at ground level is actually, there's a giant heat sump there, essentially. It's the room itself is about 12 foot wide. And there's about a 16 foot long cement slab in there. It's got like some rock mortared in just to create that heat, but then the floor in the on the rest of it, where it actually goes up to the second level, is it's almost like an outside decking. It's a wood. It's a very hard wood. I can't tell you exactly what it's maybe like a Douglas or something.
And John?
Okay. Well, these are houses that we tried in the 80s, and I don't think anyone builds them anymore.
And so passive solar, what does that mean exactly?
Well, no, this is more than passive solar. Okay. This is an envelope house. So this mm-hmm. this house actually has two sets of walls. So when you look out your bedroom window, if this is what I think it is, you basically look into a collection room. And this room has in it thermal mass. So when the sun comes through these single pane windows to diminish the greenhouse effect, it warms up these floors. Now, some of them just radiate. Others have actual collectors within them. The better ones had collectors within them. We could store water and reheat the floor. So this is basically a house that is built inside a house. It's sort of a double turtle, actually.
Going back to our original
yes,
image?
Yes, it really is. And I have not done a lot of studying on these. I think that what we have found with modern insulation systems is that these are not efficiently priced to build new anymore. Now, of course, you know, Joel bought a bought a used home there. So he probably did. He probably did quite well. So it really is a complicated question. So is Joe going to put triple glaze R8 or R5 windows where the old single glazed was, and then this big collection area will still do some collecting, but not as much? Or does he simply keep it as it is? And I think at this point, he's going to have to live in it. I hope those windows will go for a year or two.
Yeah, the other thing that would probably be really sensible is, because we're here listening to this and trying to draw the picture of the house in our minds, we're not getting a full picture. You may want to hire a specialist, an architect or an engineer who specializes in passive solar or solar homes. Have them do an energy audit. Have them do a review of the project. You had mentioned earlier that you have some windows with dry rot, and that to me throws up a big yellow flag, because there's really not much in the house that, quote, dry rots. There was moisture, probably condensation if it's inside. So you might have air quality issues. You might have condensation issues. Time will tell. As you live in the house, you'll see how its foibles express themselves to you. But you'll really want to speak to a professional about this, and that will help you secure your investment for a long time and get the most out of it.
And it sounds like you're saying a professional that has experience with this particular type of structure, because it's a little different.
It was somebody that an architect that specializes in solar efficient homes. Mm-hmm. That will. A lot of this stuff was studied in the 80s. Improvements have been made. Some cost of, as John was saying, some of it's just cost prohibitive right now to replicate. Sometimes the construction techniques weren't that good, mm-hmm. although the concepts were great, you know.
Yeah.
But it is probably still good to start with an energy audit on this house, because one of the concerns that I have on a 1986 envelope house is that it may leak really, really badly.
Right.
Because the sun comes in, this room gets very, very warm on the south side. You get a lot of thermal buoyancy. You got hot air up the ceiling. How much of that is getting out through bad seals?
Poor or improper use of vapor barriers and, you know, all kinds of problems. That's why I think an energy audit with somebody that knows the stuff to can interpret the issues that the auditor perceives.
Right.
All right. Good luck with that, Joe. And we are talking with Ken Adams and John Freiberger about energy efficiency and home improvement. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about how to be a thermal turtle, keeping our homes well secured energy-wise and heat-wise. And we had a comment from Christopher on Facebook who says, Ken, I can't vouch for John's turtle imitation, but I recall your turtle rendition from the Bartell Theater stage with much fondness. When were you a turtle on stage?
Well, I started a show once being a turtle.
In
a children's show for all people of all ages.
Well, there you go. I think we should probably just end here, because how can we top that?
Impossible.
Well, we actually do have a lot more to talk with them about, so don't worry. We will not stop here. In fact, let's go back to the phones and talk with Lynn in La Crosse. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We built in 2005 and moved in 2006, and we have an Energy Star certified home with radiant in-floor heat, and we put ceramic tile down, and I'm just kind of tired of it and trying to find something that I could put over the floor, not carpet, but something that would be more sustainable. And I've gone online, but I'm really not coming up with any suggestions, and hoping you can help me out.
All right, Ken?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of options. And carpet is, I wouldn't completely write off carpet either, because there are some pads that are compatible to in-floor radiant heat. Is it, I assume it's hot water heat?
We're hot water, and we are solar panel.
Oh, great. Congratulations, backup. By the way, having an energy efficient Energy Star home. That's a very good thing. Carpets are okay with a carpet pad. Cork floors will work. Linoleum, if you're looking for something that is you know, environmentally friendly. There are all kinds of beautiful new linoleums, and linoleums are considered a green product, not like vinyl floors. Some other floating floors will work. You just have to be careful on what you put as the barrier between the floating floor and the slab. And you might be able to attach these. You could check in with the manufacturers and installers, but you may be able to attach this right to the top of the tile if as long as it could fit under doors and such.
Exactly. I should have mentioned that. I did not want to take out the tile. That seems too big of a project. I want to put something over the tile.
Not unless you have like three teenage boys you can turn loose on it and go out and have coffee. But seriously, a lot of these floors, because a ceramic tile will allow a lot of heat to move through it. It shouldn't be holding the heat in. How well insulated underneath is it?
I'm sorry, what?
Well, I mean, is this a slab? Is this on a concrete slab, or is this on a frame floor that's open underneath?
That I can't. Downstairs, it's a slab floor. Upstairs, which is where I'm talking about, where the ceramic is. Downstairs, we just did the slab floor. We had it color washed, and it's beautiful. But upstairs, I'm not sure what's underneath. My husband would know, but I don't. I don't know if there's a slab or it's just framed in. I think it's just framed in.
Okay. That's good news, because what you'll want to do is check you can check the building plans. You can talk to your husband if he recollects it. You can look at photographs of the project and construction. You can even talk to the contractor if he's still around. It hasn't been that long. Find out how well the floor is insulated, because really the key to having effective in-floor heat is to have the floor insulated underneath the heat. So if it's well insulated, you be good with a lot of different products. But it's poorly insulated, anything you do is going to be a negative. Does that help?
Yes, very much. So look for what the insulation is, and then you said cork, and what was that floating floor? Is that like wood? We could put wood on top.
Well, there are people that there are thin wood floors that are floating. Some of them are plywood, some of them are solid wood. The plywood ones tend to hold up longer, although you can't refinish them. And some of them are rated to be on top of a in-floor heat. So you'll want to check that, but also you want to make sure that the floor is well insulated, because if it's not and you put something like cork or wood down, you're going to have problems. It's just not going to do the job.
You can also do a small mock-up and a test.
Yeah, there you go.
We have these laser thermometers now that you can simply point and shoot. So go buy a few pieces of cork, a few pieces of bamboo, put them on the floor, let it sit for a few hours, shoot the floor, shoot the top of the wood, and see what temperature difference. If there's 10 degrees temperature difference, well, there's going to be some real issues here. If there's only a degree or two, well, maybe we don't have problems. So I think for less than $100, you can probably carry out a scientifically valid test to make sure that you don't spend thousands of dollars and then find that you're disappointed.
Oh. Boy, that's why he gets paid the big bucks. Nice idea, John.
Again, though, isn't it kind of going back to him saying how cheap he is? Which is sometimes a really good thing, John. Don't get me wrong. Well, good luck with that, Lynn. Hope that was helpful. Let's go to Chris in Black Creek. Hi, Chris.
Hey. My gosh, I love your show. I love all of your shows.
Oh, great.
I'm Chris Zander, crystalsforkids.com. I've been in also, I mine at 13,500 feet for the Aquamarine in Colorado. You've probably seen the show. What I wanted, your guest is wonderful. He's quite knowledgeable. And what I wanted to announce, I've also been in construction, my own business, for almost 30 years.
Okay, Chris, can we're getting a little short on time before the news.
Okay.
Can we cut
right,
to the chase?
Can I make it quick?
Make it quick, sure.
Okay. What I've been doing in construction in the recent years is when you're doing new remodeling, take 2.5-inch aluminum tape, put half on the floor, half on the wall before the flooring goes in before the baseboards go on.
You're talking about ceiling.
Two and a half inch, yes, a two inch, and putting that on every door, every window before the trim goes on. You eliminate bugs, you seal the home, and I've been doing bug-free homes, and that's what I wanted to convey to.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Ken?
Well, no, what he's doing is he's sealing the inside of the outside wall, and that's a continuation of the vapor barrier, so it should work just fine,
right.
And it'll help keep the bugs out.
And, of course, if we do our thermal turtle and do a good air seal on the exterior, those bugs won't even get to that tape.
That's right.
There we go. All right. So,
thanks, Chris.
So the tape is actually the second layer after the turtle shell. Well, thanks for that, Chris. Let's go next to Roger in Dubuque. Hi, Roger.
Yes, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I built a walkout ranch in 1988. It faces east on the back side, which faces west. After a few years, the woodpeckers started to put little holes in to get the grubs out of the 4x8 sheets of plywood or cedar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 5 years ago, they started putting the 2-inch holes in.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're gonna keep moving in. John and I worked on a couple of these houses that have had just huge problems with woodpeckers, and I love the little guys. I got to tell you, they're really cool, but they stay close to home. So when the Mr. and Mrs. Woodpecker has a baby woodpecker, that baby woodpecker stays in the same area, so you've got more pecking. And so it's very, very tricky.
It's a family affair.
It's very tricky to get rid of them. And they don't always, I mean, they're looking for bugs, sure, but all it has to have is a nice place for them to grab onto with their little feet and a little bit of moisture running down the side of the wall, and they'll be pecking. They'll be doing some investigating.
When Ken and I worked on this, it must be 8 or 10 years ago, I ordered all of the woodpecker repellents. I ordered everything online.
Yeah.
We researched everything. There's stuff made out of the skin of grapes that if you apply to your house weekly, I think it'll keep the woodpeckers away, but no one wants to apply it weekly. And what Ken and I found is there are two things that work. One works for sure. You get a permit and you shoot them.
Not that we're advocating that, but
we have had people where they had to do that. The second is an owl. We actually put a roof hatch into a house so the gentleman could move the owl around the roof on his house regularly, because you have to move the owl, and that kept the woodpeckers at bay.
And well, just to be clear, we're talking about a plastic owl.
A plastic owl, yes. No, well, not a pet owl.
The folks that we're talking about, Marcia, they tried the owl. That didn't work. They tried an electronic spider that walked up and down the wall. That didn't work. Our latest one now is that we've gone to the areas that the woodpeckers like to peck, which is at the high ends, right on the corner of the building. Mm-hmm. That's where they seem to like to go. And we put these, I don't know exactly what they're called, but they're like little spikes, little tiny spikes that stick out, and you just put a couple screws and hold them in place. And it's only been a season, so we don't know. And she's also has some mesh that she tried in another corner. That seems to give them a nice footing. So it's really tough. And they say there are some finishes, paintable or stainable finishes out there that will repel them. I have not seen it, so I really, really feel for you, Roger.
The other thing they're doing, Roger, is they're actually doing territorial sounding during some times of the year, too. And this, I think, is why they peck at these outside corners, is they want to sound as big and loud as possible.
Yeah.
So there really is no solution at this point to woodpeckers, unfortunately.
One of the things that we've done, though, Roger, that may be of small solace to you is we'll take a hole saw and we'll bore out the woodpecker damage and then make a hole plug out of a similar piece of material and then glue that into the opening so the grains line up, and then touch it up with stain. And unless they're right at eye level, they sort of disappear. So that might be one sort of fix that doesn't involve having to replace the entire sheet.
John?
The other thing is, Roger has a house that was built in 1988. It sounds like he has 4x8 sheets, probably like texture 111, a cedar plywood, basically. This is not going to last forever. And when Roger redoes this house, he can do the thermal turtle thing, take off that old siding, and then put up cement board, which comes in 4x8 sheets. So he can really make the house look exactly as it is now, and the woodpeckers are not going to go after the cement board.
Right, you get a dozen woodpeckers with bent beaks because they hit the concrete.
And word will spread. They'll tell their friends. Well, Roger, I hope that information, even though it's not a quick fix, will be of use to you. And let us know if you do come across something that seems to work, because it sounds like John and Ken and a whole bunch of other people would like to hear about that. Well, we have so much more to talk about with John Freiberger and Ken Adams, but we do need to take a look at the news from NPR and from Wisconsin Public Radio as well. But John and Ken will be with us right up until 12:30 today. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Dave Potraz is our on-air producer today, and he will be happy to answer your calls and your emails and check your Facebook posts as well. We will be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Like many things in life, it can be a little too easy to not pay attention to our home's upkeep until something goes wrong. But inevitably, something needs to be fixed, and we need advice we can rely on. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Glad you could join us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're lucky to have two pros that know a lot and who have a good time sharing their experiences, too. Ken Adams is the owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Great to have you back with us, Ken.
Oh, great to be here.
And John Freiberger is a Wisconsin-registered home inspector who specializes in the evaluation of older structures. He's the founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. Always a pleasure, John.
Great to be here.
All right. We have some folks that have been waiting online for quite a bit, so let's go there first off and talk with Joan in central Wisconsin. Hi, Joan. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. No problem. See, I've got a 2x4 stud house built in the 60s, and I had an energy audit done, and we're going to be taking off the exterior siding, the old 1-inch brown board sheathing, and the insulation, and the air barrier. And then we're going to be putting foam insulation in, 7/16 OSB sheathing, and Tyvek, and then siding. Should I also be putting in any foam board or something in addition to that, or is the spray foam good enough?
How thick is the spray foam going to be?
It's going to be filling the cavity on the 2x4, so 3.5.
Yeah, so what does that come out to? That's about
21.
R21? Oh, you should be good to go. So you're going to fill the cavity with foam, and then you want to put OSB and Tyvek to the outside and then side it.
And what's OSB?
OSB is a type of a plywood made out of chipped, basically...
Chip popple.
Fibrous stuff glued together.
Yeah, oriented strand board.
Yeah, it's nice. It's less expensive than regular plywood, and it works really well for siding.
Mm-hmm.
For substrate on behind siding. I'd say you're good to go. The only thing that I would maybe consider is to put furring strips to the outside of that siding or outside of that air barrier and set up your siding as a rain screen type system. Part of the reason, what kind of siding are you going to put on?
SmartSide.
SmartSide. Yeah, that would be good for SmartSide too. What happens is when you put a little furring strip, either anywhere from 3/8 out, you're going to let air move behind it, and it's going to help keep everything dry. And if you tie it into your soffit vents, then you've got a full system coming up the wall through the soffit and out the peak of the roof.
That's really good advice, Ken. The earlier versions of SmartSide resulted in almost $1 billion in damages to houses.
Yeah.
So SmartSide is a wood product. So having the venting in back of it, and we have not seen problems with the new SmartSide.
No, they use marine glues now.
The glues are better. But still, if you want something to last long, and it will also give you this pressure balancing. But I guess the question is, why put down a 7/16 foam when one can put on a 1 or 1.5 inch foam? Inch and a half foam would give you R30. 41 wall instead of an R25. So it's really quite an improvement.
Did I misunderstand? I thought that Joan was putting on a 7/16 OSB.
OSB. Okay, and then we really should put foam over that OSB.
Well, that would be really nice.
Well, if we don't put foam over the OSB, we have thermal bridging. So then our walls with the thermal bridging deduction are down around R21.
At each stud you have this thermal
bridge. At each stud,
bridge,
exactly. Yeah. So Joan, you really want to think about putting at least 1 inch, and what I would probably do is put like a Thermax, an inch of Thermax around the outside, and tape the joints so you actually have a double wind and water barrier, then put on the furring strips. If you go to the... here in Madison, the Forest Products Laboratory, you can download information on rain screen systems because they have studied them. And this is going to give you a long-lasting product and is really going to improve your thermal efficiency greatly by putting on the 1 inch of foam or even inch and a half.
Now, I'm just wondering how the code reads on the foam in the wall. If she fills the cavity, she's good to go. If she only puts in 2 inches, which is kind of an industry standard, 2 or 2.5 inches, my understanding, my reading is that all that insulation is supposed to be to the outside of the wall, which is impossible to do if you're spraying it from the outside. So you will want to fill that cavity.
That's a really good point. And there's actually rules on that. Yeah. And the proportion of interior to exterior varies depending upon the zone you're in. And I would actually have to look that up.
Yeah.
But I think...
But that rule of thumb is 1 to 3, I think.
Yes, it is. It is 1 to 3. But as it gets colder, like in northern Wisconsin, it changes to like 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you present a very good argument, Ken, for adding additional insulation outside of that OSB.
All right. Does that help, Joan?
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thanks so much for your call. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Jennifer on Facebook says, we're looking at purchasing an ICF, insulated concrete form, home. What are your thoughts on this type of construction? It has an air exchanger in it since it's supposed to be very tight. John? Ken?
Sure.
They're pointing at each other.
I like them. They tend to be really well sealed. Sometimes they can be a little tricky to remodel in the future. So, depending if they're thinking about adding on to it, that sort of thing, they might want to do a little more investigating before they go with it. But I find them to be pretty cool, actually.
And what do you like about them? What is it?
Well, I mean, what they are is they're like a big sandwich with a piece of plywood on one side and on the other, and inside it's all foam. And you stack these things up, and there's a particular way you seal them edge to edge. And so then all of your infrastructure, electrical and so forth, goes either into channels or even on a framed-in wall inside of them. So you're creating an outside envelope. Is there anything you want to add?
Well, I think they're nice and airtight. The question we have is what is the thermal resistance of the wall systems? Because of some of the earlier systems in the 80s really did not have a lot of insulation in them compared to current houses.
Yeah, I'm visualizing this as being 8 inches thick. You know, that's my experience with these. So
right, but you didn't have that much foam with them, and so that became the issue. And if this was the expanded foam blocks, those did not have a great insulation in them, and they are difficult to work on even on the exterior. So I would, if you're purchasing this house, make sure you get a real good home inspector, somebody who actually knows something about this. Watch for any issues with condensation and such, and make sure you know exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, if you have that information in hand, you'll be in good shape.
Right.
I wouldn't be afraid of it, but I would want to check out the way the construction techniques mostly.
Yeah, and we got to think like a turtle again.
That's a good point.
We do. We need, because our major heat loss in that house is still going to be up rather than sideways.
Mm-hmm.
So how well was the attic air sealed? Do we have a good vapor barrier? Do we have a good air barrier? And how much thermal resistance do we have on the top?
How much insulation on top of the wall in the attic?
That's right. And is it well air sealed? Mm-hmm. So hire a building inspector who is familiar with this type of construction and have it well inspected before you purchase it.
All right. And we did talk earlier, John and Ken, about, you know, that thermal turtle idea and actually basically constructing another shell around the house. How does that apply to the attic and the roof? Because as you're saying, you know, if the walls could be great, but if the top is...
it's only as good as the weakest link.
Right.
So John knows so much about this. I'm going to let him take over. But I will start by saying one thing, that if everything is equal, 70% of your heat loss is up through the roof. So when you bring up the roof, that's such an important part of this process.
Ken, you're really right. And one reason there's a lot of the loss is going up is because of the leaks, the air leaks. And what we really need to do, if we're thinking thermal turtle on the top, we're looking at one of two places. One is on top of the roof. So let's say we've got a mid-century modern house built in 1960, beautiful cathedral ceilings. It's got those exposed beams, exposed pine, and it's got 2 inches of insulation above it.
Useless.
But we need to put a new roof on. So we can put energy panels over the top of that. Cornell Corporation makes them here in Wisconsin. Many other people do as well. One can go to the Cornell Corporation website, take a look at them. They have vented. They have unvented. Very easy to install. If you want to move the thermal envelope to where your roofing is. But if you have a traditional house and you need to do the attic, you have to air seal. We're working on a very difficult case right now where the attic has been beautifully insulated and there's frost everywhere despite having the correct amount of venting. So we know we have bad air leaks. What I've been doing on many old houses is vacuuming out all of the insulation and then putting a spray urethane foam down a couple of inches to seal everything. And then that gives me my turtle shell. That has made it airtight, has made it vapor tight. And above that, I can then put in cheap cellulose insulation so that I have good thermal resistances as well.
And that's when you put it in the attic floor or the ceiling of the heated space.
Right.
And then you do foam first and then cellulose on top of that.
That's correct. And so we still have a traditional vented attic, so the roof is still vented, the soffits are still vented.
Great. Thank you for that. Breck is on the road and has an issue, so let's go there. Hi, Breck.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. I have a 1950s home. I live in southern Indiana. We don't have the frigid cold like you guys do, but...
I'm so sorry you're missing it.
Huh?
I'm so sorry you're missing the cold.
No, I hate it. I'm telling you, I hate it. But anyway, I got 2.5 by 3.5 walls. It had the old clapboard siding. We covered that with a wraparound insulation barrier, then put siding on. Now, in my attic, my air ducts were cold when we bought the house, and we were having sprayed-in insulation put in, so I put it in 3.5 foot and buried everything. Now the issue I'm having is I put hardwood floors throughout the whole house, and I put down the half-inch insulation barrier that they told me to, but my floors are ice cold in the winter. I got to run my heat on like 80 to 85 to make it comfortable in the house.
What's underneath there?
It's just a natural gas furnace.
So below the house, do you have a basement or do you have a crawl space?
Solid slab.
Okay. And what we have on the slab is we probably, because of when the house was built in the 1950s, is it wasn't thermally isolated.
Insulated, yeah.
Right. So what we're going to need to do is do some pick and shovel work around the exterior, I think, and we're going to have to add insulation in the soil around the exterior of that house to try to isolate it. And to reduce the heat loss. And you'll probably need to come up with a good design. I'd like to bring that insulation up as far as we can. And you're going to need a way of making it look nice as well. But you're going to want to do a little bit of studying on how you currently insulate a slab. And you should be able to simply... Indiana uses the International Residential Building Code, so you can simply look at that or ask a contractor to look at it for the standard, and you can even exceed that standard. I think you're going to want at least 1.5 inches in southern Indiana of exterior extruded polystyrene insulation. You have to make sure it's an insulation that is closed cell so it doesn't take on water, and talk to a good contractor, and maybe this is something you can do yourself with a couple of high school kids in the summer, a bit of digging around and get that slab isolated. Now, you still haven't been able to insulate underneath, but the soil under the house isn't going to be as cold as the exterior of the house is going to be on a day like today.
Yeah, what's your frost level down there? Is that about 3 feet or 3.5 feet?
The concrete?
No, how far below the... grade do you have to go to get to the below the frost line?
36 inches.
36, yeah. So you don't have that much digging to do. You go down to the top of the footing and insulate that outside perimeter of the concrete work, and that would really... It's not ideal, because ideal would be to insulate underneath the slab too, but it would go a long way to helping you out.
All right. Good luck with that, Breck, and never pleasant to have cold feet on the floor. Another flooring question from a caller was, what's the best type of flooring for a wheelchair? Would you guys have any idea of that?
Well, smooth floors are nice. You know, tile can have grout lines, and you can get, if they're big grout lines, you could feel your chair sort of bobble in them. I like wood floors. I think wood floors are really forgiving if you... You know, they're easy to wheel over. Mm-hmm. Is this in your...
It's just a caller who left a message.
Oh, left a message. Yeah, I like wood floors and probably... Wood... linoleum's another good floor. The wood will last longer.
Mm-hmm.
So anything smooth.
Okay. And...
Unless it's on a grade. If it's on an angle, you want something that's got a little friction to it so you don't go sliding.
So you don't pick up too much speed there. Sean lives in Elkhorn near a wetland. He said he's had water in the basement. He had issues with that, and he installed a new sump pump with a backup and has not had issues since then. But he's looking at finishing the basement and asks what the proper way to insulate the walls and floors would be. He said there's a lot of information out on the internet, but he's not sure that it's accurate.
Well, I guess I'll rely on my old friend Joe Stilbrick and his ideas. And what Joe suggests is that on the walls you want to place a rigid insulation. You want it to go all the way from the underside of the floor, which means you've got to notch it around the joist where the joists come through. And you want to run that all the way down the wall. Then on the floor you want to put in a 6 mil polyethylene vapor diffusion retarder over the floor. And that gets lapped up over the face of the wall's insulation, not
so
behind
it. So a piece of plastic on the floor.
On the floor.
Below,
but you're putting the wall insulation on first, and then the plastic, and that comes up on the inside of the insulation. Now, that insulation is vapor permeable, mm-hmm. so we don't want to run that. If water comes down that wall, we don't want it to float into that impermeable visqueen.
Because yeah, then you're making a swimming pool.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So that is important. Now, the rigid insulation, you want to have something that's 35 PSF or better so that you can put sleepers on it. And you're going to put a wood sleeper over your floor insulation.
Which is like the furring strips we were talking about before, only
right.
This is on the inside wall.
That is correct. And generally, I think you're going to want to have at least 2 inches of insulation on the floor. So that should give you a relatively warm floor. Then over the top of that, I would never put carpet in a basement, mm-hmm. even with this insulation system. But you could put on a floating wood floor or something. If you put on a floating wood floor, you want to make sure it's a product that is uniformly finished on all sides. Because if it's not uniformly finished on all sides, I can basically will guarantee that it's going to cup on you. Mm-hmm. On the walls, you're going to need to put furring strips over that wall insulation. And that should be a foil-faced insulation with the joints taped, because then it becomes a little bit of a water barrier. And then you can use a gypsum board. Now, there are mold-resistant gypsum boards. What we have usually used, we've actually used exterior calcium board, like gold bond board, and then we've put thin coat plastered it. So there's absolutely no paper down there. So there's nothing upon which mold can possibly grow.
The one thing I need to add is that recent code changes disallow any kind of vapor barrier inside
Correct.
The basement walls. The floor is fine, but the walls. So check with your local inspector before you agree upon a foil face interior insulation, because they may say you can't use this, because some municipalities, and indeed in the state code, it says that foil face insulation is a vapor barrier.
That's right.
All right. And let's go to Dan in Racine next. Hi, Dan. Dan? Dan?
I'm here.
Hi. Hello. What's your question?
Okay. I have a 100-year-old house, Cape Cod-style house. It was aluminum-sided. I bought it last year. So my questions are, my windows are original, and it's a leaker. So as I call about wind leak and radiant leak, I want to replace the windows. That'll be a good start. But you talked about this, if I want to do something with the exterior as far as, and also insulating the walls, I'm not sure what they put in 100 years ago. And I'm not sure what they did when they aluminum sided it. I did see there's a Tyvek barrier, but and there's window wrap around all of the frames where the storm windows are at. But I'm not sure what they did as far as adding any insulation, like foam board on the outside, like you've been talking about.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to hold you there because we're running short on time, and I want to make sure they get a chance to respond.
Okay, well, first of all, the 100-year-old home, replacing the windows, is there any chance, is there any historical value to this property?
Well, the window, well, it's 100 years old. It's not any type of, you know, there's a lot of homes in the neighborhood that are that same age. So well,
the reason I ask is sometimes older windows can benefit just for reflashing them, replacing the sash weights, filling that full of insulation, then adding storm windows. If you have to replace everything, it'd be a great time to take off that aluminum siding, take off the barrier that they put on the outside of the house, see what you have. A lot of times back when they did aluminum siding, they used this quarter-inch thick, they call it fan-fold insulation. It's virtually useless. It really was a nice thought that didn't do anything, and that may be very well what you have on your house. That should come off. If you're going to re-side, this would be a great time to do it. You could take the siding off and do what we were talking about a little bit earlier, putting insulation in the walls, putting an insulation board on the outside of the walls, fur it out, and then re-side it.
All right. And John, did you have anything to add?
Well, Ken, you mentioned earlier the 1-to-3 ratio, so you want to make sure that you have more insulation on the exterior than the interior, because if he's a 100-year-old house, he's not going to be able to get an efficient vapor barrier in there. And we want to make sure that condensation doesn't develop in the wall.
That's good.
So
point.
You're going to have to talk to, I would actually probably talk to an architect or somebody who does thermal design, to make sure that you put enough insulation outside of the sheathing of this house so you don't run into condensation problems inside the wall and destroy it.
Yeah, there's also paint on vapor barriers, but they're only as good as the holes in the walls where your electric boxes are and stuff like that. So if you can seal them from the outside when you have the walls open, great. But there's a lot of little tricks that you'll have to investigate, and an architect's a great idea.
All right, and we will have to leave it there. Of course, there were other questions that we weren't able to get to, so sorry about that, but we will cover them another time. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. John, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
It's always a lot of fun, and I certainly always learn a lot. Well, coming up tomorrow, David Drake and Jamie Knack are here to talk about the wonderful diversity of wildlife in our state and how that wildlife deals with a Wisconsin winter. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network.